Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. We invite you to join us as we examine the unvarnished truth about the drug war.
Speaking the truth in times of universal deceit is a revolutionary act. That's a quote from George Orwell. We have generals and ex-generals, war hawks and neocons on TV all the time expounding the need for this war and that war, eternal and everlasting war. Dwight D. Eisenhower forewarned us to beware of the burgeoning military-industrial complex. What if the U.S. had a Department of Peace where we could hear the words of writers, ministers, and doctors about the need and the ability to wage peace on planet Earth? Please support U.S. House Bill 1673. Visit the website of the Department of Peace online at dopcampaign.org. Okay, tonight we have with us Preston Pete. He's the editor of a great new book, Under the Influence, The Disinformation Guide to Drugs. But first, we're going to do a little bit of news, and we'll be back. President Bush thinks the drug war is the best thing since sliced bread. John Kerry at least has taken note of the fact that the Afghan warlords are making millions from the opium trade. Badnarik of the Libertarian Party understands that the drug war is a complete fiasco. This is a quote I was able to obtain from Ralph Nader.
The drug war has failed. We spend a total of $50 billion annually on the drug war. The problems related to drug abuse continue to worsen. We need to acknowledge that drug abuse is a health problem with social and economic consequences and responses. Therefore, the solutions are public health, rehabilitation, social services, economic development for more jobs, and tender support time with addicts, particularly youngsters, in our increasingly depersonalized society. Law enforcement should be at the edges of drug control, not at the center. For every nonviolent drug offender we imprison, we could send three students to college. The fact that 25% of the world's prisoners reside in jails in the land of the free and home of the brave is a national embarrassment. Corporate prisons have become a public housing project. For all these reasons and more, the Surgeon General, not the Attorney General, should be at the core of the war on drug usage by showing the way to demand reduction and rehabilitation. It is time to bring some illegal drugs within the law by regulating them, taxing them, and controlling them. Ending the drug war will dramatically reduce street crime, drive-by shootings, violence, and homicides related to underground drug dealing. Leading conservatives and liberals alike believe the time is long overdue for this much-needed reform. It's time to bring this subject out into the open and right into the center of the presidential campaigns.
Okay, we're going to go next to a look at sports. First up, let's talk about the passing of Ken Caminiti. 41 years old, much too young to die, from what I hear, one heck of a guy. And I know that he was very kind to my children and thousands of others when they were learning baseball. There have been some in the corporate media that tried to lay this off on Caminiti's use of cocaine, particularly crack cocaine. The Astros' current manager, Phil Garner, said, quote, "He continually made bad choices. It's unfortunate that drugs get such a hold on you and such a hold on you that this is what happens," end quote. And you have to remember that anabolic steroids were part of Caminiti's life as well. Quoting Phil Garner again, "I would think that in Caminiti's story, you've got to look at that, and I think you've got to consider that steroids may have been a factor in his death," end quote. Caminiti played the game like he meant it. This is from Jeff Bagwell, his good friend. Quote, "One of the biggest attributes Ken had is his heart. how our relationship developed and all the great things that he's meant to my life. I think if you start with his heart and how great a person he was, that's a good way to remember him. Another sports story regarding Ricky Williams. This is part of a discussion I had with Steve Fox of the Marijuana Policy Project.
Now, Steve, of late there's been some news stories that Ricky Williams, the NFL running back, may want to try to get back into the league, but what's your take on that situation?
Well, our take on that situation is that he never should have been pushed out of the league in the first place. The fact that they drug test their players and will actually suspend them or give them huge fines for the use of marijuana just seems completely irrational. Someone shouldn't have their livelihood taken away because they choose to smoke marijuana instead of alcohol, which is far more dangerous.
I suggest that you visit the website of the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org.
To close our look at sports, we need to make note of a couple of things. Every aspect of the drug war is a sham, a stage play, a tragedy. The first eternal war, the first war of terror. Drugs are not the monster prohibition is. Oh, yeah, sports. On June 12, 1970, Doc Ellis of the Pittsburgh Pirates threw a no-hitter against the Twins while on acid, LSD, lysergic acid, diethylamide. We should judge people by their actions, not the contents of their brain. Okay, our guest on tonight's Cultural Baggage is Mr. Preston Pete. He's the editor of DrugWar.com, an editor for High Times Magazine, and editor of the great new book, Under the Influence, The Disinformation Guide to Drugs. Hello, Preston.
Good evening. How are you, Dean?
I'm well, sir. Good to have you with us.
Likewise. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. If you will, tell the folks a little bit about your website. I find it to be fascinating and just full of information.
The DrugWar.com is owned by Dan Russell, the author of Drug War, Covert Money, Power and Policy, and Shamanism and the Drug Propaganda, two fantastic books giving a real clear picture of what's happening behind the scenes driving the war on drugs. I took it and expanded it as far as I could, covering every angle of the war on drugs and drugs themselves that I can possibly think of.
Well, thank you, Preston. And so far as your work with High Times, I understand you guys are going back to the single magazine format?
We are going back to the single High Times format, and I'd like to correct you. I'm no longer an editor-at-large. I'm a contributor and columnist at High Times again. They've dropped the Grow America format and combined everything back into the one magazine again, like we were doing for years and years. And it looks good. The new issues are really sharp and clear. As always, I think they could use more news, but that's my own personal opinion.
And so far as what brought me or drew us together for this discussion was your new book, Under the Influence, The Disinformation Guide to Drugs. I was quite surprised and happy to see that many of the guests that have been on Cultural Baggage, their words are included therein.
Dean, you have an amazing selection of guests on your program. I'm honored to be one of them.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm always very impressed with the caliber of guests, and you're right, there's a lot of people that contributed to Under the Influence that have made appearances on your show. Like, I believe Ethan Edelman's been a guest of yours.
Indeed.
And Catherine Austin Fitz, and
yep.
Zach Cole, and I'm not even sure who else in the book, but quite a few of them. I'm positive I got as many top-notch drug war reformers as I possibly could to contribute.
And looking through it, I am truly amazed at the caliber of the writing that you've been able to put together and just the truth that's so evident, as I'm always saying. The truth about the drug war is so evident if people will just study up a bit.
Oh, absolutely. And our mainstream press isn't going to be the ones, for the most part, giving us that news. It does take a bit of searching normally. That's why a book like Under the Influence is so handy, because there it all is, right there in between two covers. It's right there. You know, anything you want to know about the lies and deceits and propaganda behind the war on drugs, it's at least touched on in Under the Influence.
Well, sure, there's you discuss the economics, the propaganda, the medicinal uses, et cetera, et cetera. It is practically an encyclopedia from which to find that information.
Absolutely. That's a great word for it, an encyclopedia. That's exactly what I was trying to do with it. You know, I wanted to touch as wide a spectrum as possible, all the way from first-person accounts of being targeted by prohibitionists to the topic of cognitive liberty, the idea that we have the right to alter our consciousness, that it's totally prejudice to make a distinction between the use of, say, alcohol and any other drug, any illicit drug today. There's no scientific basis for that whatsoever.
I see you have an article from our good friend, Mr. Cliff Thornton.
Oh, yes.
Perceptions of Race, Class, and America's War on Drugs, because that's the heart of it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. That's such a huge part of it. And it touches on so many areas that people don't think about on a day-to-day basis. The fact that, I don't know what it is, some ungodly amount, 13% of black men aren't allowed to vote. It's locking up, you know, one in four black men in America. It denies them the right to choose the people that make the laws. They're putting them in prison. You know, it keeps them from getting meaningful employment. It keeps them from getting financial aid for further education. It's basically creating a subclass of people in our country.
Just a quick quote from his writing. The prison population as of 2003 was a little over 68% were black and Latino males. And, of course, their representation of our overall population is about a fourth of that.
Right, right. And he also includes a letter from a young man named Reginald Alexander, who is an inner-city drug dealer, who's now going to be sitting in prison until 2007. And I'm not sure what the actual offense was, but it was something to do with drugs. And he describes in the most gut-wrenching, tear-wringing words what it is to be somebody living in the inner cities of America today and see that one of the surest ways out of that is to deal drugs. He talks about how the inner cities are being targeted by, you know, little things like the shoe manufacturers are targeting these $180 pairs of shoes to inner city youth through all the mass media, and these kids can't afford that in any way except to go and drug deal or, you know, commit some other, you know, fast money-making crime. They're certainly not going to get it at underage employment, and they're not, you know, how many of those kids have an opportunity to get anything but that in our society today? You know, it's an amazing, amazing letter in Clifford's article. I was so happy to have the privilege of publishing this kid's letter. I would encourage anybody to even just go to the bookstore and read this kid's letter in Clifford's article if they don't want to shell out for the book. It's that meaningful.
Steve Wozniak, the High Times, former High Times reporter, mm-hmm. talked about the fact that the... thank you. Talking about the fact that so many pot smokers are willing to give $350 to get the custom deluxe bong, yet they won't give the $35 to Normal or
right.
another organization to help make that difference. Let's talk about that aspect, if you will.
Right. He makes the point that, you know, marijuana is not going to be legalized or even decriminalized as long as that's the case, like you just said. You know, he was at some Boston Freedom Rally, I think it was, a couple of years ago, and saw a bust happen, and, you know, saw the people being taken away by the police for smoking or promoting smoking, whatever it was they were arrested for, preparing to smoke. Two long-haired young kids walked up to him, and instead of asking what happened or, you know, where's the literature, what's going on here, they were like, where can we get the bowl? You know, who's selling glass around here? And it just seems like that's the attitude among so many pot smokers. Say we have, what, over 50 million people in this country who have admitted to at least trying marijuana, and we don't have any change in our political system in this country. It befuddles me. I cannot believe that we don't have more of our compatriots at the voting booths saying, okay, this drug war is wrong. I smoke marijuana, and I'm not ashamed of it. I like it. You know, personally, me, I much prefer marijuana to alcohol any day of the week. And yet, my friends who I smoke with aren't helping me vote out the drug war. No, it's almost like a complacency. And I hate to say that because that's such a stereotypical, like, description of marijuana smokers. Oh, marijuana smokers have a motivational syndrome. But I know so many who don't. They just don't seem to want to put any effort into actual reform. reform work. They're more content to just hide behind their closed doors and continue their private practices without making any effort to change things. And I'm not sure where that comes from. And that's not just limited to the marijuana field. You know, in this country, we have that problem all across the board: apathy and lack of interest in anything outside of our own apartments and own doorways.
Well, Preston, you have this article from Michael Simmons, the gang that couldn't grow straight. And we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk about that.
Marijuana heals thousands of our kids every day. Drugs are just bad. Okay.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Weakness, nausea, skin rash, unexpected weight gain, swelling of hands and face, difficulty breathing, flu-like symptoms, sluggishness, dark urine, or pale stools double the chance of dying of heart attack or stroke. Time's up. The answer, Vioxx. Another FDA-approved product making billions of dollars for its manufacturer, taken off the shelves because of the inherent dangers of its use and the loss of potential billions from pending lawsuits. Illegal drugs are less dangerous to our society than gasoline, Mr. Plumber, and Tylenol. Against all odds, reformers battle on a daily basis to thwart the sting of the snake oil salesmen in the $1,000 suits who steal billions of dollars from gullible Americans each year using feigned patriotism, scammed science, and lies. If you would like to join the effort to end this hypocrisy, please visit drugtruth.net.
Okay, we are back with Preston Peete, the editor of the great new book, Under the Influence, The Disinformation Guide to Drugs. And this is the Cultural Baggage Show on the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio. Preston, the gang that couldn't grow straight. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yes, that's by Michael Simmons. It's a great article. He updated and revised it for this edition. It's a reprint of an older article of his that he flushed out and filled in for me and for our readers. It's the story of Peter McWilliams and Todd McCormick and their idea that they were going to take the new Compassionate Use Act, California's Compassionate Use Act of 1996, and run with it. They were going to supply the medical marijuana clubs in their area, and to be honest, they were going to make a lot of money. They were going to be in on the front lines of the new legal marijuana that was now going to be allowed in California. And apparently people in California, like the Attorney General, were going before the voters and saying, if this law passes, that's it. Marijuana is legal in this state. And they took that at faith. And they rented a mansion. And Peter McWilliams was a self-help author and various other topics. He wrote a self-computer user guide back when the home computers were just starting out, made a lot of money self-publishing, was friends with people like William F. Buckley, lots of conservative people, very outgoing, charming individual who I unfortunately never had the honor to meet. I wish I had. But he was also, exuberant. He had a lot of life in him, and he rented a mansion. He gave Todd McCormick a lot of money to rent this place, and they started growing over 4,000 very, very good, highly potent marijuana plants. And the way they describe it, particularly Todd, they were, experimenting with specific strains, trying to find out which strain would work for which ailments, what indica was better for this and what sativa was better for that, and could you take this one and work sufficiently, and could you take this one and do away with your pain? And I don't know how much truth is actually in that, but I'm certainly not going to argue with their reasoning, but to make a long story short, they were raided and the police shut them down, and Tom McCormick did, I don't know, three years.
I think that's right.
I think it was 3 years in prison, and the kids got fused spinal cord. I mean, How dare the prohibitionists lock these people up? I'm just so appalled. I don't care what he was doing. If it was growing marijuana, I don't care. He shouldn't be in jail. I mean, it's a flower. We all know that about me, my feelings about this topic. But Peter McWilliams, unfortunately, was told he couldn't use marijuana anymore. And so he wasn't able to keep down his HIV medications. He wasn't able to keep down food. He wasted away and then died. And there's a big debate among the movement about whether or not he choked to death or he had a heart attack or exactly what the cause of death was. But irregardless of all of the nuances, the federal government barred him from using his medicine, and he died. The government has to take some blame in the issue, because if he had not been told he couldn't smoke marijuana, chances are a lot better that he would still be alive and with us today.
Let's not forget there was a third party in that. Was it the Bel Air Cannabis Club? I think it was something to that effect. Rene Boucher, who actually had to go to Canada.
Right. Who's living in Canada now. Who's she married to, Chris?
Chris with the Cannabis Culture magazine. I can't think of his last. Bennett, I believe.
The guy, Chris Bennett, exactly.
And they now have a new baby, and she's actually being put before the
Immigration Board, right?
Immigration Board in Canada to see if she can remain there or to be sent back for the automatic 10 years.
Yeah, which is crazy. Crazy. She was, quote unquote, seen watering a plant or watering plants, and that's going to give her 10 years in jail? That's nuts. That's insanity. You know, meanwhile, we're hearing from the same people who are locking up people and trying to lock up people like Rene Boucher that it's okay to go and drop bombs on civilians in other countries. I mean, it's just the insanity of these people never ceases to amaze me and infuriate me. You know, that's the main reason why I'm writing and publishing the things I'm doing today, because people like Rene Boucher are being targeted by the prohibitionists. People like Peter McWilliams, who, as far as I know, never hurt anybody in his life, ever. He was growing flowers, and they killed him, basically, by their actions.
And indeed they did. A guest I had a couple of weeks back was the husband of one of your authors here, Bill Hildebrand.
Right.
He and Robert Rappellian had come on a couple of weeks back and talking about parents and educators against prohibition, more of a ground-level organization. And Aaron wrote about your title, his Medical Marijuana Mom, Marijuana Patient Tells Her Story. And again, this is an individual situation, much like Peter McWilliams.
Right. And they're, you know, these people are out there fighting on their own, basically. I mean, they have help in the reform movement, but it's individuals like this who are going to make a difference. Because, like we discussed earlier, there's too many people who don't seem to be willing to go out and vote for their conscience and vote for the people who are honestly going to change things. You know, and that's a very major and important point right now with the elections coming up. I have very controversial feelings about the candidates coming up. I don't personally see much difference between the two of them, and I'm a very single-issue voter. I'm very focused on the war on drugs because it touches so many aspects of our life. And while I think John Kerry, honestly, is probably going to be a tad bit better than Bush in some areas, I don't see much to be optimistic about in terms of the war on drugs. John Edwards just came out today with a new call for increased war on methamphetamines. And yeah, meth heads are, you know, really drastically berserk and bizarre people. But I don't think we should be locking them up in prison until they're breaking into our house for more meth. You know, it strikes me as an excuse to, okay, there's too many black people in jail. How can we fix that? Let's not release the black people in jail and the Hispanic people in jail. Let's put more white people in. How do we do that? Well, more whites use methamphetamines. There's a new way to even out the prison population. We're not going to decrease it, but we're going to increase it. You know, John Kerry has Rand Beers as one of his top advisors. What is going on here? You know, I'm really not very optimistic about our choices in this presidential election. It's only the independent candidates, the smaller third party candidates, who are even making any kind of nod to drug reform. The major candidate, have you seen any mention of the drug war in the presidential debates?
None whatsoever. John Kerry did mention that the rate of Afghan opium growth was rising.
Right, which is a great point. I'm glad he made that because, you know, that's something I'm personally very focused on too, is the connections between officialdom and the drug trade. I don't personally feel like I can talk much about reform without pointing out the fact that our government itself works hand in hand with drug traffickers around the world on a day-to-day basis. And Afghanistan is such a glaringly perfect example of this. You know, the Taliban had wiped out poppies in 90% of the country. The only 10% of the country where poppies were still growing openly were in the region held by the Northern Alliance. In May of in 2001, we gave them $43 million in humanitarian aid, which isn't cash, but it's humanitarian aid, which then frees up $43 million in cash they don't have to spend on humanitarian goods. So what did they spend that $43 million on? I don't know. It could have been something like a September 11th attack even, right? So then we go in and we take over the country, and who do we put in power? The drug lords. And we're even talking about, we can't focus on the opium trade right now because it'll it'll debilitate the country and it'll cripple the country and they won't be able to do anything. And it's such an important part of their system right now. We can't focus on that. All our allies are asking us for help in fighting the opium trade in Afghanistan. And don't get me wrong, I don't personally have anything against trafficking in opium. And if people want to traffic in it, that's fine. I just don't want my government trafficking in it when at the same time they're locking me and my friends up for going out and buying the same drugs that they're shipping across the borders by the ton.
Preston, they tell me we've got about 2 minutes left, and I do want to once again alert folks to this great new book. It's a bit over 300 pages.
Right.
It's Under the Influence, The Disinformation Guide to Drugs, edited by Mr. Preston Pete.
Yeah, and we're having a release party for people in the Northeast region in New York City on October 21st from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. If you're in the area, at Uncle Ming's. The information is online at drugwar.com. And we would love to have as many of you there as possible.
Okay, now, Preston, you know, you were talking a moment ago about that situation in Afghanistan, and I'm looking here at one of the articles you have in here from Phil Smith, Afghanistan Drug War Yields to Terror War as Rumsfeld Glad Hands Drug Dealing Warlords.
Yeah, Phil Smith is an incredible writer and reporter, one of the editors with DRCNet. He might be the editor, but I know he's at least an editor for DRCNet's
another hard-working group out there.
Absolutely. And he does their weekly update, and he wrote the article about glad-handing with the drug lords, exactly describing what I just described with Afghanistan. And he wrote the first article in the book, Imagining a Post-Prohibition World, as well, where he takes all of the arguments from the prohibitionists about, well, everybody will start using more drugs, and we'll have more addicts, and we'll have more crime, and, you know, every argument they give us, or they throw at us to say we can't have reform, he takes and just shreds. You know, I also have people like Peter Gorman and Bill Weinberg discussing the South American angle, where we're, like, dumping, you know, tons of toxic poisons on the people of, you know, Peru and Colombia and Ecuador and Bolivia, and yet every year we get more money and dump more poisons, more coca and poppies are produced.
Preston, we're going to have to kind of wrap it up. Once again, your website for the folks listening out there?
www.drugwar.com.
You bet. Preston, I want to thank you for being with us. For those out there on the network, we didn't have the Poppygate report, but it will air this Friday on the 420 Drug War News, and you can always pick it up at drugtruth.net. Our guest next week will be Dr. Tom O'Connell, who has conducted a study of hundreds of medical marijuana patients, and we'll hear some startling commonalities within this group of cannabis consumers. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I must remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing.